Now we got a quorum. I'll call the Subcommittee on the Actuarial Contracts to order. Clerk will take the roll, and I guess what we're here for is to review the submitted proposals to us and winnow them down to, I think last time we did four, three or four.
Did four.
Yeah, last time we did four, but if we can whittle them down to three or four to send on to the regular pension commission. So with that, we have any testimony?
Members, what I'll do, just briefly give you some sense. I don't think you're going to have much testimony. We're not asking for presentations by the seven bidders, potential bidders. So I've prepared for you, and it's a letter-sized formatted memo. I've tried to condense to some degree the proposals from the seven firms. The process that we identified in the request for proposal was that they submit proposals. They would be summarized as presented here, considered by the Actuarial Services Subcommittee to identify the finalists who would make full presentations to the Pension Commission, who would then select the actuary. So your process today, as Representative Nelson indicated, is to winnow down the number of seven down to what you deem a more manageable number for making presentations to the Pension Commission. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be a whole heck of a lot of help in probably helping you winnow these down, in the sense that there are no real obvious ways to winnow these down. All seven of the bidders meet the minimum requirements under Minnesota statutes. They have to have an approved actuary as part of their firm, and under statute, an approved actuary is someone who's a fellow in the Society of Actuaries. The Society of Actuaries is a private, a non-governmental credentialing organization. The fellow in the Society of Actuaries is their highest credential. They have a less rigorous credential, an associate in the Society of Actuaries. And it entails going through a number of exams to get to either credentialing level. So all of these plans have meet the minimum requirement in that they have an FSA, a fellow in the Society of Actuaries, as part of the firm and as part of the bid. They all indicated, to the best we can determine, that they understood what the task is that they're bidding on, that they presented a work plan that covered the bases. They're all within a range of possible compensation that can be accommodated in the commission budget. So there aren't any easy ways that I can provide for you to eliminate any of these. It's really going to be a judgment on your part as to what your impression is of the bidders and which ones you would like to hear an in-person presentation from. Several of the bidders are large actuarial firms. There are a couple of smaller firms. Foster and Foster appears to be a smaller, more local, historically more local firm. And the consortium of the Pension Trustee Advisors, KMS Actuaries, is essentially two actuaries, one in Colorado and one in New Hampshire, who have joined up to make a presentation. And they appear to be actuaries who have retired from some of the larger actuarial firms. The rest are national firms, are fairly large and fairly well established. With that, I'd be happy to try and answer questions, but I think at this point you might want to, if you haven't wandered through the proposals, now is the time to utilize whatever criteria you think makes the most sense.
Counsel, any questions? Representative O'Driscoll.
Oh, Chair Nelson, you know I'd have some questions, right?
Yeah.
Just a suggestion that can maybe help us to get some scope to the project here. Maybe Mr. Martin can just do a bit of backgrounding for the subcommittee as to the duties and tasks that the actuary would be doing, how they support the pension commission, what we would be asked to do, with their recommendations. And then I know that everybody, having done these at the local level, puts their pricing in, so much for this hour and so much for that and this kind of an activity. If Mr. Martin could give us some kind of an idea, based on past experience, what we might be looking at on these. Clearly, cost isn't the only factor, I think, that we need to consider on this, but pricing is going to be clearly a component that this commission will be looking at, I'm assuming.
Mr. Martin.
Members, the actuary for the Pension Commission since 2009 has been a reviewing or auditing actuary function rather than the primary production actuary, the person responsible for doing the official actuarial evaluations of the dozen defined benefit pension plans that we have. And so what we're requesting the actuary to do, there are three significant functions that they would do during the five-year course of the contract. There would be two of the items are one-time only, and then there's a recurring item. The one-time only items are a review of the commission's standards for actuarial work. The Pension Commission, since 1984, it's required by statute to have standards that govern how the actuarial work is performed by the actuary who values the 12 pension plans that are regularly valued. That document was last reviewed 5 years ago when we last hired the consulting actuary. And so we tend to do that every time, every 5 years or thereabouts, to make sure that it's up to date. Some of the items, much of the set of provisions in the standards for actuarial work depend upon the technical aspects with what, from a computer standpoint, can or can't be done. Once upon a time, the actuarial work was a much more simple, much more, they lacked computers, and so they had to do it more on a prototypical person in a pension plan, and then multiply that cost by the total number of people in the plan. Now they value everyone individually in a pension plan. So the standards for actuarial work can get obsolete or may not track with the standards in the trade. So we have that update every 5 years or so. The other one-time only item is going to be the review of the experience studies for the three major plans. TRA, MSRS, and PERA are required under statute to have periodic experience studies where the experience of the plan for a period of time is compared with the expected experience of the plan. And if there are departures, then changes in the actuarial assumptions would arise from that. If people are living a lot longer, they're not dying as early as we had predicted, that may mean that we need to strengthen our mortality assumptions. Normally, the experience studies occur on a quadrennial basis every 4 years. They were delayed for two extra years by the 2011 legislature. So during the course of the 5 years coming up, there will be a set of experience studies coming. And so that is one of the one-time items. The recurring item pair of them is a review of the actuarial work that's done by the plan actuary for 11 out of the 12 plans that are being valued, and a replication on a rolling basis of one of the plans. So the actuary takes from scratch and redoes the valuation and compares it with the plan actuary's work for one of the plans, and then reviews for accuracy, consistency with standards, and reasonableness the actuarial work for the non-replicated plans. And so that's a recurring item. The request for proposal asked for compensation requirements for these three tasks, not on an hourly basis, but a bulk fee, if you will. The commission actuary also, at the request of the commission, can do a number of other things, can review things like benefit increase cost estimates, can review actuarial assumption, optional annuity factor or early retirement factor resettings, can conduct other studies as the pension commission may direct, and that would be on an hourly basis, depending upon the work. I don't remember exactly all the things you asked me to cover. What the actuary does is what I just did. If there are other things I've missed, I'd be happy to try and frame them for you.
Mr. Chair, it was just and I think Mr. Martin did allude to the fact that with the potential cost with some of these, with the hourly rates and different things, and I think he's done a pretty good job of articulating that by saying that there are activities and that we could do some a la carte kinds of things, if you will, if it's the commission's desire to do that, and the fee schedule for such services is in here as well. Mr. Chair, if I might, just one other question for Mr. Martin to help us with this process.
Mr. Driscoll.
Mr. Martin, again, newer to this, so please indulge me a little bit if you would. From your experience as the executive director, have you found deficiencies, things that you would like to have that you didn't have, things that would be more helpful for you in executing your job and making recommendations to the commission that were or were not being performed under previous contracts?
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, nothing comes to mind. This is pretty much technicians reviewing the work of other technicians. We want to make sure that the actuaries that are working for the various pension plans are performing their valuations as close to the standards as is possible, and as reasonable and as correct as possible. The current actuary retained by the Pension Commission, Milliman, is one of the bidders. They did discern that a couple of the actuaries had difficulties and raised those problems with the Pension Commission to try and strengthen the actuarial work that's being performed. So I think that function was carried out. So I have no particular criticisms or comments one way or the other.
Mr. Bard, if I remember right, 5 years ago when we did this, hired Milliman, before that we hadn't had one for the council or for the pension commission. We were relying on what we got from the individual plans. We didn't have our own actuarial in a period of time when the commission didn't have one.
Mr. Chairman, the retention of a pension of an actuary by the pension commission has changed over time. It's changed a couple different times. When the commission was first created back in 1955 as an interim commission, we retained a local actuary as a reviewing actuary. At that time, there was no replications done, but we did retain an actuary from one of the local firms that changed sometime during the late 50s to another local firm was the reviewing actuary for some period of time. When that firm was purchased by a national firm, the actuary who had done the work for the Pension Commission, Dr. Franklin Smith, who is a professor at St. Thomas in an ASA, an Associated Society of Actuaries, as an independent actuary functioned for several years as the Pension Commission's reviewing actuary. When he retired, we retained another local actuary to be the reviewing actuary, and again, not replications, but just looking for reasonableness and flagging any difficulties or inconsistencies that the actuary determined. That person left a national firm, set up his own firm, and subsequently has deceased. In 1984, the Department of Finance was frustrated or concerned about the quality of some of the actuarial work that was being performed, in particular with TRA, and pursued changing the way that the actuarial work would be handled. And what came out of the 84 session, and I wasn't on staff at that point, I was working for the state of Pennsylvania at that time, who had just set up a pension commission. I left here and went there. The commission was charged with hiring the actuary who did the actuarial work for all of the defined benefit, all the statewide and major local defined benefit plans. And from the period 1985 until 2004, the pension commission retained the actuary who did all of the actuarial work. So we didn't have a reviewing actuary. We had the production actuary in-house or retained by us. Because of budgetary issues and other things, it became impossible since every time the legislature reduced the budgets, it reduced the actuarial budget also. It soon became impossible to have an actuary at that scale. In 2004, the procedure was changed so that the actuary was retained jointly by the seven pension directors, the seven pension systems, jointly had to retain an actuary who worked for them jointly as the production actuary, and the commission did not retain an actuary after 2004 until 2009. And then one of the pension funds actually withdrew or declined to take an increase in some state aid, and that was added to the commission's budget and the reviewing actuary. But opposition was recreated in 2008 and then first implemented in 2009.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess one other question for Mr. Martin to, again, help us to kind of shade this in a little bit. And I don't quite know how to ask this. Actuaries that are retained by the funds do their work. It's really hard to know within a week's or a month or a year's time whether or not those mortality issues that you spoke about are accurate and some of those types of things and the individual vesting for people, because we are working with a lot of moving targets and time on that. Have you found the actuary that has been retained by the commission to oversee and to be the double check on the actual funds or plans work to be that they give them recommendations in the past of some things? I guess that's one of the biggest concerns I had last time when we were going through this process. It was we got a report from the current actuary. It was almost like a checklist of things. Yep, we did this, we did this, we did this, and you've got some decisions to make. Did they offer recommendations? Do you think that they were worthy recommendations, worthwhile recommendations?
What do we? Mr. Chairman, our representative, the assumptions really get checked by the quadrennial experience study process when you line up lots of years of data against what the assumption suggested was going to occur, then you can see a bigger trend line. What the commission's actuary in reviewing is really making sure that the detail of the process is followed. When they review the experience studies, they will make sure that there's adequate evidence for the new assumption that might be recommended. That it's consistent. It's it makes sense with respect to the data that's been assembled for the preceding period. But in the annual actuarial work, they're really looking to make sure that the process is followed. Thinking of the two things that the reviewing actuary has flagged in the past, the major items that come to mind, one of the actuarial firms was not, when they were calculating normal cost, which is the cost of the benefit program, they were not crediting service credit as of the middle of the period. They were doing it as of either the end or the start of the period, and that is not what the standards provided for, and caused a modest deviation or modest difference in the normal cost, because that firm was phasing out of public sector work. Mm-hmm. The commission decided not to make them go back and redo, change their actuarial work programming and to do it according to the standards. But it was something that our actuary flagged, and it was a technician's sort of issue, in that you had to really delve into the deep down numbers to find this deviation. The other more recent thing that was determined is that the actuary retained by the potentially former Duluth Teacher Pension Fund was not using a pure interage normal actuarial cost method. They were using a variant of it, which is not according to the standards. And that's the sort of thing that we're looking for from our actuary to really check not the high level numbers, but to make sure that the underlying numbers really make sense. And the way they do that is that they spot check, they run the actuarial they calculated the liabilities and costs for selected individuals within the pension plan based on age and service, and check them against the plan actuary's work to see if they line up, and if they don't line up, get an explanation of what's going on, and then mm-hmm. back and forth until they resolve the issue, and it's to give us the assurance that what's being done is done according to the methods and the assumptions that we've approved or that the pension commission has set.
Representative Driscoll.
Just a comment, and then I'm good, Mr. Chair. This reminds me very much of having to retain auditors at the local level of government to check the city's record and the accounting, and are we following the standards and things, and they will bring back that information. Sometimes it's always hard to know, are you doing things the right way? Yes, by the book, but is it still in the long range best interest to continue to do those things even though they fit nicely into the box? Is the box too big or is the box too small? And that's always the hard part to figure out.
If I could add one additional thing, as you're aware, Ed Burek is going to be retiring shortly. My retirement is not all that far away either. One of the things during the course of this 5-year contract, both of your current professional staff members are going to be gone. You may or may not want to utilize the actuary to a greater degree in giving you counseling or advice as to not what the pension commission has done in the past, because it's unlikely that any of these actuaries have a real good hands-on grip as to what legislatively you've done. But when it comes to the questions of how the pension plan operates, how things are costed out, what's going to save you money, what's going to cost you money, what's consistent with practice nationally, what isn't, to the extent that you need that sort of advice, you also may be relying on whoever you hire to a greater extent than we've needed to in the past.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That very critical comment, that their retirements going forward. So that should be in the back of our mind continually. And I'm wondering, Mr. Chair, is your goal, I know that in the past we've proposed four different proposals to bring in front of the full committee. Is that what you're thinking? Four out of seven?
Yeah, three or four. Yeah, three I think four. Four. Yeah, four would be a good number to send forward, unless there's three or we find that are exceptionally above everybody else. But three or four, I was thinking mm-hmm. of moving forward. And you're right. If Mr. Martin had made the comment about the retirements, I would have mentioned that, because he's mentioned that before, that we may have to rely on these people a little bit more than the past one did. And 4 or 5 years ago, we sent four names forward. I think you and I were the subcommittee. Mm-hmm. We sent four names forward, and the full commission made the decision of which one to go with after the presentation. So, mm-hmm.
But they're not really retiring, though, are they, Mr. Chair? Seriously?
I joked with Ed that I was going to make that last session. I threatened to put a bill forward not allowing the retired. notwithstanding the U.S. Constitution, but that's a whole other.
Well, Mr. Chair, we may have a special session this summer, so you still may get your
wish. We may still be able to put that in, but no, yeah, that's.
So, Mr. Chair, so where do we go from here? Do we look at? Do we have Mr. Martin go through some of the strengths and concerns, or our individual?
I think we can, Senator Rosen. I think we can go through look at the summary, compare them. Representative O'Driscoll said, looking through the summary earlier, and again this morning before I came down here for the meeting. They have different. A lot of them have different cost factors, and if you read through some of the comments and the strengths and weaknesses in the review of each one of the proposals, you know, there's some have higher costs. They may be lower front end, but they're higher costs, and you know, we all know how that works. It's, you know, bidders sometimes will get you in with a low upfront cost, but then nickel and dime you to death with the additional costs later on down the road, and actually be a much more expensive proposal. So, I mean, I think we have to look at the proposals, and the four of us decide which of the four we think are the ones we'll bring forward to the Pension Commission. And I think that's what our work is here today. I mean, we can probably look at these ourselves and take a little time here and look at these and maybe ask some questions of our staff, and four of us come up with a decision.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Driscoll.
This thought just occurs to me, and we may not know this, but I think this is maybe helpful. As I was looking through the summary, I don't necessarily see jumping out at me a list of quote-unquote current clients that these actuaries have. And where I'm going with that is if some of these are already doing other state or large public pensions, how are they doing? How are those plans doing? What kinds of recommendations have they made? Because that could be indicative of the kinds of recommendations that could be forthcoming to the state of Minnesota.
And Representative O'Driscoll, when I looked through the summary, there was one that did not give any list of current clients. I think the majority of them have given a list of some of the ones that they've done. Few of these that I've looked through, they've listed them, but I don't think they go in depth as, like you said, how those plans are doing overall, what recommendations they've made, and that they don't go into that. I think that's more something we should ask at the ones that we bring forward, that give us some of the things and give us some of those recommendations, and we can forward that on to them, so when they give us our presentation to the full Pension Commission, we can get those questions answered.
I mean, I kid when I say this, Mr. Chair, but there is a certain hint of this. Illinois is in big trouble. I don't want them touting that they're the actuary for the state of Illinois and want to do it in Minnesota. What has happened to Illinois?
And just for a little history, 4 or 5 years ago when we did this, Deloitte was one of the ones that bid last time, and they had a conflict with, because they were already doing one of the plans that we oversee, and I think that was one of the deciding factors of not to go with them. Milliman is the one that currently is doing our pension stuff, and I believe they've done a decent job. I'm not aware of any huge mistakes that they've made, but yeah, you're right. I looked at some of them too and thought about, as I was looking at the places that they had, that, okay, what's that pension, that state's pension in, how's that one doing, and yeah. I kind of those same thoughts went through my head.
Mr. Chair.
Starting to think alike, Mr. Chair.
Well, that's scary.
Yeah, that's really scary.
Senator Rosa.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if it would, I can't remember how we did this 5 years ago, but I wonder if it would be helpful to have Mr. Martin just go through, starting with book, about consultants and talking about some of the strengths. I mean, I can read this, but I almost have to write this all down, and then we, because there are some significant, Millman says there is some fatigue, perhaps some fatigue with our, so I'm just trying to figure out how to move forward with this. There is a...
Mr. Martin, would you...
Sure, I'm happy to do that.
Senator Goodwin?
To add to that, I'm wondering if we can, I'm trying to see which ones actually have employees in Minnesota. Some of them are suggesting employees in New York and Chicago and so forth. I just think it would be more convenient to have people that are actually stationed in Minnesota for our pension plans. And, of course, it would be better for our outcomes for jobs as well. But also, so maybe you can mention those that have actually have offices.
Members, I can do that right away. The only one of the bidders that is actually located in Minnesota and would have the all the folks who are doing their work would be Deloitte. The others are all located somewhere else. Milliman has an office in town but does not do any of the work for us in their Minneapolis office. We're We've utilized their Milwaukee office both when they were the reviewing actuary and previously when they were the prime actuary. It was the Milwaukee office. When we first hired Milliman as a reviewing actuary, the primary actuary there was actually in Omaha, Nebraska. So only Deloitte is that's the only proposal from a firm that is planning to use their Minneapolis office.
Mr. Chair, another reason that's probably going to be important is because I noticed some of these charge out-of-pocket expenses, travel expenses, and others don't. And you know, I'm assuming that if they're coming from the East Coast or wherever, that there could be considerable travel expenses with some of these firms, then that's something to consider.
And Senator Goodwin, as I remember from 5 years ago when Senator Rosen and I looked at these before, that was one of the considerations we also brought up, and Deloitte, with their conflict, one of the ways they were going to take care of that conflict was to have the work done out of their, I think it was the Chicago office and not the local office, but they weren't going to have their local office do it, so it kind of mitigated the fact that they were here, that their people, again, they would have those expenses. Now, that's changed. They no longer have that conflict because the fund that they were overseeing is now part of HERA, I believe.
Okay. The Deloitte situation specifically, they were actually representing the city of Minneapolis, reviewing the MRF and the Minneapolis police and fire issues. They're all three now are consolidated with PERA, and so Minneapolis no longer retains them, and so that's how the conflict, if there was a conflict, was resolved. The out-of-pocket expenses can be an issue. It's not an issue with respect to the fixed bid item. So for the review and replication, when the actuary appears before the pension commission and tells you what they found, that consultation, that meeting is covered as part of the fixed bid. It's really when you're having them do something else and they need to come here and present the information to you. If we were going to have them review a major benefit cost increase proposal estimation, and you wanted them here as part of the testimony or part of the consideration when that's heard, then that fixed cost or that out-of-pocket cost would kick in.
Okay.
So I was conscious of that, and I think the summaries, I've tried to cover that in the summaries, that the out-of-pocket is only applicable to the per hour functions, not the set fee items.
Okay.
The first, I've done this alphabetical, so this doesn't represent any favoring on my part. It's simply the name of the firm, the first name, and if they have multiple names. Buck is one of the older actuarial firms in the country. George Buck is maybe the first public sector pension plan actuary. Did a lot of work in New York. They're a very large firm. They've been purchased by Xerox Corporation, so they're now part of a larger firm. The proposal is this. Problem with seven of these is I have to stop and think about where recollect what's happening. This proposal is to be staffed out of several offices. They're going to utilize people from their St. Louis, Chicago, Minneapolis, and Detroit offices. And that's one of the questions, is it's not clear exactly how that's all going to be coordinated, because they're pulling folks from several different places rather than just one place. From a cost standpoint, they're on the upper end, but not the highest, as far as the cost for the for both the review and replication and for the experience study. They're on the upper end of the range. From a per hour, looking at the principal actuary involved, they're also at the upper end of, but not at the very top of the range there. From a contract standpoint, the other item I flagged, they have a standard letter of engagement, set of terms that they use. So it's not clear just how far they're going to deviate from that. We have a contract that we've been utilizing, or the broad outlines of a contract we've been utilizing for some period of time. I have no idea if there are conflicts. There may not be. But if there are, they've got a set of contract terms that they like. We have a set of contract terms that we tend to utilize. And if there is a deviation, there may be. It's not clear just how negotiable it is. That's a very quick summary of a much longer summary and a very large presentation in their proposal. Chiron is the next one. This plan seems to be an outgrowth of an actuarial firm that primarily did at one time Taft-Hartley. Those are the collectively bargained pension plans in the private sector, and now has a substantial public sector set of clients also. They haven't been around as long as Buck there, with the last decade or so, but they're proposing running this out of a couple of places, New York, Washington, and Chicago. So again, there's some question about just how the work is going to be coordinated. Something I noticed in the proposals, there's a lot of emphasis on internal peer review actuaries, someone within the company, but not part of the production or not part of the normal staff who looks at things that are going out the door to make sure that they're according to optimal standards and optimal requirements. That may be for our benefit as the consumer of the service. It also may be a function of their concerns with liability issues. They're have been, I don't say a rash, but it has happened in the last decade or more that actuarial firms are being sued by their clients when errors are made, when liabilities are missed, and there have been large judgments against some of the actuarial firms. Mercer, who used to be the actuary for a number of our statewide plans, essentially got out of the public sector business because of liability issues. They had a very large judgment against them, if I remember correctly, up in Alaska. And so this peer review business may be for our benefit or maybe for their benefit. It also tends to lead to some of the utilization of offices in other places and what may seem to be a lack of coordination or some lack of clarity in exactly who's running and how it's running from top to bottom within the firm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Martin, I would assume this is going to be more expensive if you have a peer review process.
Mr. Martin.
Representative or Senator, it could be. It's built into the fixed fees, so we're it's something that they've been emphasizing in their written work, exactly how much of the review actually occurs, and how much of that is a cost that's spread over all clients, and how much versus how much of it is actually borne by us isn't clear, but it is in their fixed fees. We would be paying for it potentially when we do the a la carte services that we may be utilizing from them, where when it's done on an hourly basis and it's done a little bit out of the norm, then if they're doing peer review there, that may add to the fee structure there, but it would be built in otherwise. From a cost standpoint, Chiron is about the midpoint or thereabouts of the cost for the reviews and replications, and is the midpoint essentially for the experience study review. So the two big fixed items that everybody included in their proposals, they're about at the midpoint. From an hourly fee, they're close to the bottom for the hourly fee for their primary person. But I think if I remember this, they're having co-leaders on this. We have two people in charge, and so it's not clear. They do give a range. Several of the actuarial firms give a range for their actuaries and hourly fees, and so it's not clear where in the range the two different co-leaders might land. The concerns that I've raised, this plan has added a lot of clients in recent years, and so I've one of the things I would be interested in if they were to make a presentation is to make sure that their recent growth doesn't diminish their ability to serve us the way we want, and specifically with their co-leader actuaries. They've got 15 other clients, and so it's a question of how much attention they really can show to us. One of the things we asked for, but this firm chose not to do, is we asked for an example of the firm's best work in providing an actuarial report, and they didn't give us a sample actuarial report. So,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Is that kind of odd? You would assume that the criteria would be met. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that hit me, stuck out to me when I read the summary, too, and I read through the report. So.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members,
Mr.
it
Martin.
Could be simply that there was a clerical follow-up, too, and somebody forgot to include the report. So, but, yes, it is difference, and it you need to weigh that as you see fit.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you. Mr. Martin brought something up that, and I don't know if we can quantify this, but the point that he made with the number of clients having taken on clients. Do we know how big Minnesota's pension plans would be in the pond, how big a fish it would be with some of these others? And the reason I ask that is because you look at if Minnesota's the largest that's in there, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're the best or that's in our best interest, but we also don't want to be the smallest either because we don't end up getting maybe the kind of love and attention that we want for our pension plans. I think we want to be able to not have a firm relying as a large percentage of their revenue or their business on just the state of Minnesota's plan either. And maybe we don't have that as an issue, but I just raise it as a question because it may affect your level of service.
Mr. Martin.
Members, what we're looking at here, we're asking for these folks to be just review and auditing actuaries, not the production actuaries, where the size of the pension fund, how many lives you have to actually run calculations on makes a lot of difference. When we're looking at clients, you're going to see folks who have both a lot of where they're the prime actuary and some where they're the reviewing actuary, which is a newer set of duties, as I understand it, for actuarial firms. So when we're looking at clients and just how we're competing with them or how we stand up as against someone else, it may be more of a prestige thing that working for the Minnesota Pension Commission may get them other business with other similarly situated organizations, and it may be something that they're pursuing. There isn't a lot of raw production work. Even if they do PERA as one of the with a 300,000 to 350,000 lives, it's a big pension fund, but it's not going to be that much. They only do it once during the 5-year period. I'm not sure. It's very hard to figure out how a list of clients really works as far as getting attention and just how much attention they really have to show to us. Our work is pretty straightforward once they figure out what the broad outline of our plans are and how we do business, what our status for actuarial work I'll require once again to that at a detailed level. It's not going to be all that difficult to do. If you have additional consulting services, then that's more where I'm concerned as far as the time frame. And then it also depends upon when the actuarial work lands. Just like trying to get an accountant and trying to get an accountant for early April when they're their busiest versus some other time of the year. To the extent that we may fit in or not fit in, the review comes after the actuaries that are doing the prime actuarial work are done with their business. So it's not in July and August in the main. It's more towards December when the actual work is done. So this may fit neatly in their downtime. So they may have a lot of clients that are all competing for business for attention in July and August, and we're coming in at a low input time that may work out nicely. And they'll be able to tell us that or give us a sense of that when they make presentations.
Representative O'Driscoll.
I think, Mr. Chair, I don't think it has to be the overriding decision about what we do, but since we're talking about having to purchase potentially from a larger number of a la carte services because of the staffing things we've learned about earlier today, it's nice to know that when, as a commission, we put some deadlines out there that meet with our statutory mm-hmm. kind of things, that it's not going to be C-plus work that's being brought to the table. It's going to be a caliber work that's brought to the table because we've got a lot riding.
And timely with Silvers, we get the information back, I understand.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
Now we're on Karen still, right?
Yep.
Okay, I noticed there are 5 major references, Philadelphia, Illinois, and California. Aren't those all 3 states that are in big trouble with pensions? and if so, were they hired to help them out, get them straightened out, or were they hired during the time they were building their debt?
Senator Goodwin, would they have the elevator up or the elevator down?
Exactly, right? That's what I want. Exactly.
Mr. Martin.
Members, a good actuary working for a firm or working for a pension plan that's got troubles, that may be coincidence and not causal. Philadelphia is definitely in difficulties, but that's more because of choices that they've made about expenditures of money in the past. Pennsylvania had the worst pension plans, the worst funding of pension plans, self-serving, like I say, before I got there. and things did get solved, but that was the reason why Pennsylvania set up a pension commission and hired me. Philadelphia never played by the rules back then and still apparently doesn't play by the rules, and they're in trouble. You don't hear about defaults in the rest of the public pension plans in Pennsylvania, and there are 4,000 of them. Pittsburgh, just out of curiosity, or just if you were curious, in 1980 had $75,000 in assets. They were 0.04% funded. That's when I got to Pennsylvania. That was the situation in some of the plans. And the Pennsylvania, or the Philadelphia, or the Pittsburgh Fire Department pension fund is not defaulted. They're okay. So just because they're running, because they happen to serve clients that are have some problems, that may represent an actuarial consultant who's there because they really need it, not because they caused the problem.
So we continue?
Sure. Deloitte is the next one. This is the plan that plans to perform their, do the services locally. The commission has utilized both local actuaries and has utilized actuaries who are not local, and for much of what we're doing, given the ease of communication these days, it's not a big problem from a staffing standpoint, for sure. For you, and if you want them at a commission hearing, it's more of an issue. And it's not clear whether you need them to actually be here present, or you just need them to... If written work suffices, you may not need them at a meeting, and that will depend very much on each duty that you give them of the a la carte duties. Like all of these, there is a lot of prior public sector experience. There is some auditing experience previously. The firm has been around for a long time. It's really an accounting firm that's added an actuarial component several years ago. So the length of time that the firm has been around is, I think, is probably more a function of their being around primarily an accounting firm in their origin. Their references are on the second page of the. It's a mixture of. Again, Illinois pops up if you're concerned about Illinois. From a fee standpoint, they're right around the midpoint for both the review and replication costs and the experience study review. They're a little bit towards, they're above the mean, the middle, as far as the cost hourly rates for their principal actuary. The concerns here, this firm, the bulk of the staff that it would be performing our services are not fellows in the Society of Actuaries. This had the least number of FSAs of the various bidders. Whether that credential matters or not, as against experience, is not necessarily clear. The Pension Commission in Minnesota, back when I first started in the early 70s with Dr. Smith, he was an ASA and had been our consultant for several years and continued on for another decade or decade and a half. I think it's more the quality of the person. So, but I did point out that this is several of the other bidders had more FSAs than this particular bidder.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would hope that this Deloitte would be one of them that we would recommend to bring in for a full interview. That would be one of the questions. I don't think that's a serious issue. Somebody has to be at the bottom of the scale here.
Right.
But I would ask them if they thought their experience, you mentioned something about the conflict of interest, if that their prior experience with Minneapolis would be a conflict of interest, and that I think is a fair question to bring forth to them.
It was a concern of the Pension Commission when they bid 5 years ago, and at that point they still had Minneapolis as a client. Mm-hmm. They no longer have Minneapolis as a client, so They do include Mr. Bourne from the Met Council, who was the former finance director of the City of Minneapolis, as a reference. Which does relate back to that time of the conflict, if there was a conflict.
Mr. Martin, a question I have, this concerns your second one, that they did the actuarial standard review as a per hour rather than as a set cost, and wasn't that requested to be a set cost?
That's my memory, but only two out of the seven actually gave me a set cost for the standards review. To some extent, I was doing these as I hit them on my desk, and this is one of the first ones I hit that didn't have the set cost for the standards review, and I tried not to go back. I tried to give you the first impression, one time only summary, and not to constantly try and rehone it. So, to some extent, I didn't discover that they were more the majority practice rather than the minority practice when I added that comment, and I apologize if that misleads you or causes a difficulty, but it's, I try to give you a view one time only and not try and
jump in
constantly weigh these things, and so on. That's a reflection of that.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you. You know, at the end of this now on page 4 on Deloitte, this is other Minnesota relationships, and you note that there's none indicated except the project for the City of Minneapolis for 2012. Is that odd that they would have a Minneapolis office, but they would have had no other pension projects in Minnesota?
Mr. Martin.
Members, this is an actuarial service that's provided by an accounting firm. They would have an accounting office here. They do have some actuarial folks here, and they're utilizing that staff. They also do private sector work, and they also do consulting for non-pension things like health coverage. So
they do a lot of program evaluations too.
Right. So there isn't a whole heck of a lot of Minnesota actuarial work here, to some extent, since most of our major or larger defined benefit plans use the same actuary that they retain separately. Gabriel Roeder Smith has the largest number of our Minnesota plans. We have a lot of local plans in Minnesota, but they're volunteer fire plans that are done because they're lump sum. They can be done without an actuary. Mm-hmm. So there are very few plans, it's less than 30, that would need an actuary. There's not that big a public pension market here in the sense you've either got all of it or you don't have any of it, or very little of it. And so they did some consulting for a city that had issues because they were on the hook for a lot of pension costs. Now that that's been resolved, they no longer have that client.
Okay.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Just a quick comment to help background this. You're going to find a lot of these companies have New York and Chicago connections, because those are financial centers, financial district centers in the country. So to do other companion business outside of this part of their portfolio of things that they offer. We do want to be close to other clients in the money center.
Mr. Martin.
Okay. Foster and Foster, this is a firm that's been around since 1979. It tends to be in the midsection of the country. They have offices, their primary offices are in Illinois and in Florida, and they have some satellite offices. That suggests to me that they utilize actuaries who retired from larger firms and took some clients with them that they do on a less onerous consulting basis. They're suggesting providing two fellows in the Society of Actuaries as the principal people on the proposal. It'll all be run out of the Illinois office, if I remember correctly. And there is a primary contact person, so it's not a there's a some clarity as to who one calls up to ask questions and to assign tasks. From a billing standpoint, they're right around the middle for both the review and replication and the experience studies. From a hourly standpoint, they're the lowest cost actuary for the per hour.
But also, Mr. Chair,
Senator Goodwin,
have travel for meetings that are charged in addition to a one half of hourly rate plus out of pocket travel expenses, which could add significantly to their cost, I assume.
And right, they had the most, they had the frequently there were no out-of-pocket expenses charged, or there was very, it was very cut and dry. This seemed to be more explicit, and it was the only one that had an hourly cost factor also built into it, as I remember. Principal concerns, it wasn't clear from reading the proposal just exactly how much review and auditing experience in public plans this particular firm has with the particular leaders proposed. The commission in the past has been concerned about limits on liability and third-party reliance questions. This was something that Senator Betzel, the former pension commission member, was very concerned about. It's a function of the actuarial firms being sued and other actuarial firms being utilized as expert witnesses when other plans are sued, or to the extent that third parties can even though they're not on contract terms with the actuary, can contend they were misled and were damaged and can litigate and win if there's a mistake or a problem. I'm not as concerned by those liability limits and the third party reliance questions when we're utilizing a reviewing and auditing actuary, because it's the prime actuary who's doing the principal work for the pension plan that's really under the gun. They're the ones who actually would have liability if there's an error. If our actuary didn't catch the error and it eventually popped up, there may be some collateral liability as a consequence, but it's I'm not sure exactly what our role would be in that kind of litigation anyway, and so I'm not as concerned about that, but that's a traditional concern of the Pension Commission from the last time we did this. So I did raise it, and there does seem to be something of a smaller pension plan orientation in the past by this firm, and they may be jumping to a bigger stage with making a bid for this work. And I don't know if that's a problem or a difficulty, but it seems it has some flavor in their bid. Milliman is the next one. This is the current actuary that's been retained. Milliman historically has been almost not exclusively, but primarily a private sector actuarial firm. Has been in the business for essentially since World War II. Has a large number of offices. They are they do have an international practice, so they have offices worldwide, principally out of Seattle, Washington. This is being proposed for their Milwaukee Brookfield, Wisconsin office. They obviously know our Minnesota pension plans because they've been both the last actuary who did work for the Pension Commission when they did production work, the primary work for the pension plans, and then they were the first actuary to be the reviewing and auditing actuary, so they have lots of familiarity here. From a compensation requirement, they're one of the two that did bid the actuarial standards review. They were slightly above the median when it comes to both the cost for the review and replication and the experience studies. And they're middle-ish when it comes to the per-hour rate for their principal actuary. A couple of things I raise here. This firm has held the commission's contract for a long period of time, and when someone has been the consultant for a long period of time, there's always a question of just how enthusiastic they are about the account, how much it's been built into the woodwork, much they're very hungry for the business.
Our Senator Goodwin.
Did they have the contract before this one, too? How long have they been our actuary?
Senator, they've been the actuary as the auditing reviewing actuary for the past 5 years. They also were, when the commission had the actuary who did all of the actuarial work, they were our actuary from 1990 until 2004. So they've had the contract for essentially the last 25 years. If there is a potential conflict of interest, the Milwaukee office of Milliman does function as the peer review actuary for the actuarial work for the Bloomington Fire Relief Plan. That work is being done. It once was done out of the Bloomington office. It's now being done out of the Minneapolis office is now being done out of the Chicago office. And one of the two actuaries that we deal with at Milliman looks at that valuation before it goes out the door. It does a peer review, so it's a step back. I don't view that as a conflict of interest, and I've signed off to that effect in the past when they've asked whether I would have a problem with that. I didn't. And it didn't seem to rise to the level that I needed to raise it with you. If you want to second guess that, this is the chance. The Bloomington Fire Department is a volunteer, or at least an emergency on-call fire department. It's unique in Minnesota in that it provides benefits in the same fashion, more or less, as the Minneapolis Fire Plan or the old St. Paul Fire Plan used to. They provide a monthly benefit for life based on one-third of the salary of a top-grade Bloomington police officer. as that salary gets reset year to year to year. It's something that happened. Bloomington convinced the legislature to do this in 1965. They're the only plan that does it this way. So they're not a paid fire department, but they provide pension benefits as if they were. So it makes it a fairly complicated piece of actuarial work, but they've almost always been fully funded in the last 25 years, and they're not, I mean, you haven't seen the Bloomington Fire Relief Association in front of the Pension Commission, yeah, probably during your durations on the Pension Commission there. It's not been a contentious situation with the fire department, with the city, or with us. And our guy making sure that it was done according to Hoyle seemed not to represent a conflict, but there is a connection here, so I don't want to raise that.
Sure. Representative Chris.
Thank you. Mr. Martin, just to compare the questions that had happened previously with Deloitte and their involvement with Minneapolis and Milliman's involvement with Bloomington, could you maybe just, if I got this history right, Pension Commission had some oversight with some of the Minneapolis things where technically I suppose we do because it is a pension in the state of Minnesota authorized by the legislature, but it's a kind of a different animal where it's a smaller plan.
Yes.
Pretty straightforward definition of benefits and participants and things where it might be more of a wild card with the Minneapolis adventure from before.
Well, Mr. Chair, yes. In the case of Minneapolis, Deloitte was really a consultant for the city who had a very adversarial relationship with two or three of its pension plans. And so instead of just doing regular actuarial work, they were more discussing options, strategies, ways to address problems.
Advice.
More advice and less just production, just numbers only. In the case of Milliman's work for the Chicago office of Milliman doing the actuarial work for Bloomington, it's strictly just putting a number to the liability, and our guy's just checking to make sure that the liability number was calculated correctly. And it's not any advice. There's Minneapolis Police and Fire were also litigating things with the city during this period of time. It had an actuarial component to it. I don't know the full extent of what Deloitte did for Minneapolis, but the likelihood is it was much more involved in judgment issues than what would have been involved with Bloomington Fire.
Representative Driscoll. Okay. Continue.
The next one is the Pension Trustee Advisors KMS Actuaries. This is it's really more of a collaboration than a firm. It's two independent companies that are coming together to perform this function. They're fairly recently formed. They appear to be individuals who retired out of larger actuarial firms and are doing somewhat niche business in both places. They also, as a collaboration, they also work for the Ohio Retirement Commission. The Retirement Commission in Ohio is almost as old as the Minnesota Pension Commission and is an independent or a somewhat similarly composed, somewhat similarly charged statewide entity. This is the only firm that's done actuarial work that I can tell, other than Milliman for us, in a somewhat comparable setting somewhere else for some other state. The organization of this, the two primary actuaries, one actuary from each firm, are going to be the actuaries on this particular account. There is a third actuary who retired actuary in Colorado who does some peer review work for them, but doesn't seem to play much of a role in the proposal. This plan is, or this firm is the high end of the costs on the review and replication. So in this case, it's $110,000, a little over $110,000 a year that they're proposing. The low is $82,500, and the midpoint is in the upper 80s. For the experience study, the high is $25,000 and the midpoint is $21,000, so it's not hugely different. This particular firm is a little above the midpoint when it comes to the hourly rates. So it has a lot of prior experience, and it has the experience in a comparable entity in Ohio. Because they only suggest utilizing the two actuaries who are in different parts of the country, although the Colorado actuary is designated as the lead actuary. There's a question of capacity. Typically, these firms have a set of people. There will be the primary, more seasoned actuary, and then there are middle-level actuaries, and then there is a certain amount of junior-level staff, typically people who are in the process of taking their exams to become an ASA or to become an FSA. In this case, we have two FSAs, and that seems to be it. There is a certain amount of they have a number of clients, and they've retained a lot of clients recently. One has added 37 clients, the other has added 61 clients, mm-hmm. And they've only been around for 5 or 6 years. So. They have a sense of what they're doing if they do this work for Ohio, but I don't know how much it competes with other work that they've already contracted out. Now, a lot of, especially the New Hampshire office, I've looked at some of the actuarial work that's done for the Massachusetts pension plans, and that's what the New Hampshire office seems to do a lot of. They have a lot of town, borough pension plans, and it's highly regimented actuarial work, so it's pretty formulaic. So it's more sticking the data in and crank and out comes the numbers. So I don't know to what extent it's a real consulting load. It's more just a processing problem or issue. So that would be something to raise with them if they were asked to make a presentation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Senator Goodwin.
You know, I think the one thing that bothers me about this one is that's so vague. They have three professional personnel and the use of various subcontractors, and we don't have any idea where those subcontractors come from, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we do or we don't?
No, we don't. They were not clear as to our members what they would, when they would utilize these subcontractors. Mm-hmm. And we don't know who the subcontractors are at this point. The way we've structured the actuarial contract in the past, both when for the actuarial firms that were the production, did the primary work, first Wyatt and then Milliman, and now with Milliman as the consulting actuary, the auditing actuary, is they specify the staff that will be working on our account. And if there's a substitution, they've got to clear it with us first. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy with that process, knowing who's doing the work, and there will be consistency in the people who are doing the work. And so if they were the contractor, that would be an issue I think we would have to resolve during those negotiations, is a little more clarity than is presented in their proposal.
Mr. Chair. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you. Mr. Martin, I just have a couple questions about the staffing, and Senator Goodwin was right on where I was heading with this, too. Are both of these firms that are forming this consortium providing equal services, and so they're kind of doing a shared relationship based on workflows and some of those kinds of things? One might do more, one might do less, depending upon what's in the pipeline. Is that the impression that... That's the impression I'm getting. Is that an accurate impression or assessment?
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's really hard to tell from the proposal. The Colorado actuary is the lead actuary that's being proposed, and so I suspect that he's got a few less clients added recently. So I expect he may be carrying slightly more than 50% of the load, but I'm sure it's a tag team operation. But it's very hard to tell from the written work. It would have been unfair to call up Ohio and ask them how it occurred there at this stage of the game without calling up somebody from all of the various plans with a somewhat comparable question. So I didn't. So I don't know what they're doing in Ohio, which would be somewhat analogous to what they're likely to do here.
Mr. Chair, the other major concern that I have, and it's not necessarily with this, it becomes more prevalent with the way that this is being structured for this particular entity, but the issue of malpractice and liability insurance, I think we would be, if we did have a problem, we would have some real difficulties of being able to pin the tail on that donkey, if you will, as to who it is that's liable. You might get a lot of, well, he said, she said, I said, and we don't want to, I don't think, put Minnesota through something like that. I think we want to be able to know who the players are that are at the table.
Members, we've never had an issue where we were anywhere near to the point of actually litigating anything with our consultants. I think you may well be right, but I don't know how viable as an actual possibility that is.
Well, Mr. Chair, you guys will be gone, so we won't have you to check up on them.
For anybody who does go back for history on this, I'm sure that the consultants who have put proposals in will go back. I am not advocating that the state of Minnesota wants to be litigious with whoever our new actuary is. It is a part of the due diligence and the vetting process, because we are trusted with lots of folks and their futures on here, and so we have to make sure we're not leaving anything off the table on something like that.
Mr. Chair, members, if... I think that's something would be valuable to raise if they are doing this winnowing process, if they're one of the bidders that makes a presentation. This would be something that we could nail down at that point. And they can tell us, presumably, where on paper it's very hard to discern.
Mr. Martin.
The last of the seven is PricewaterhouseCoopers. This, again, is an accounting firm that's added over time an actuarial services portion of their business. They've been around for a fair period of time from the 60s. They're international in scope and have an awful lot of employees throughout the world. This is being proposed for our account would be serviced out of the Chicago office. On the conflicts of interest, they had a somewhat more unusual approach to their conflicts of interest. It said because of its size and all the people it employs, it can't identify all potential conflicts of interest. And they do indicate that they do have some substantial business with the state of Minnesota with MNSHR, with the Department of Human Services, and the Department of Public Safety, but they're non-pension related retentions in all cases. They do propose using an FSA as the primary actuary, and they have a couple of FSAs that will be connected in some fashion to the account. From a compensation standpoint, they're on the bottom of the cost for the review and replication, and they were on the top of the cost for the experience study review, and they have the highest cost for the hourly rate for their principal actuary. So they're a mixture of top and bottom. Again, this is a team of actuaries that's being proposed, and it's unclear just how much auditing experience their team has, and then they have the higher compensation rates for hourly. I should observe that although when we initially retained Milliman out of the Omaha office, the backup was at the Milwaukee office, and it was intended to be a primary actuary, secondary actuary. As it turned out, shortly after Milliman contracted with us, their Omaha actuary left the firm to go to another firm. The business reverted to the Milwaukee office, and as a practical matter, we have a team of actuaries there. We have two actuaries who are pretty much intermingled. We can utilize either one of them. So we've had we've entered into experiences where we've had two offices in effect doing the work, and we've had instances where we've had a team and it's worked. So simply fact of having some disconnection between the two people may not be a problem. That's the
review.
That's the walkthrough that...
So I guess members, now we have to decide which four we want to bring forward, or which three we want to not bring forward, knock out. And
mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chair, should we just number them and hand this in our agenda and someone count them up?
That would be one way of doing it.
That's the way that Milliman was actually selected. The commission didn't come to a clear consensus as to who to hire, and rank ordered the proposals, and Milliman won the rank ordering. So you've utilized that practice before. It's not to recommend it or to...
Yeah.
Rank choice voting?
It's quick.
I guess it could be called that if you want to. If you want to open a can of worms.
Just what's... Struck me when, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, before we go, I'd like to just ask Mr. Barton a clarification question on the conflict of interest. Within our proposal, did we ask for provide a definition of conflict of interest for them to look at?
No.
Mr. Barton shaking his head no.
So in the proposal that's coming back from Price Waterhouse, since we didn't provide a conflict of interest, they might not have known how to address that, because they may say it's up to us to decide whether or not the business that they're doing with these other entities constitutes a conflict of interest. So I went back and I looked at the conflict of interest and everybody, and they said no Minnesota business, no Minnesota business. And so I don't know if it means that they don't know what a conflict of interest is. They may raise that and have us define whether we see that as conflict or not.
Mr. Martin,
I probably should enter in again, Mr. Chair. I was a little cavalier in saying we didn't define conflict of interest. What we actually asked them for was an identification of connections or retention by entities, Minnesota public pension plans, Minnesota employers, Minnesota labor unions, or other individuals who have an interest in public employee pensions, a disclosure, and then an indication that they would have to explain whether or not they thought it was a conflict of interest. So we wanted the disclosure and then their handling of the question, could this be viewed as a conflict of interest? It was somewhat open-ended in that sense. So we didn't just say, do you have any conflicts mm-hmm. of interest? We wanted to know who they might have been retained by that would have an interest that was potentially adversarial or contrary to the Pension Commission's interest.
Then, Mr. Chair, to that same point,
Driscoll.
Do we know that these organizations that have given proposals, are they a member of some type of a professional standards board or some other kind of a group that would have a code of ethics? Because I'm sure that there would be a definition of conflict of interest that they would have to abide by to be part of or accredited by some entity that they would want to have for a professional standard.
Mr. Martin.
Representative, they are members of a board of several organizations, typically the Society of Actuaries and the American Academy of Actuaries. I think all of them are members of both of those organizations. There are definite standards of practice in the way they're supposed to mm-hmm. conduct their business. I've never actually explored whether they have a conflict of interest provision in either of those two bodies. Standards that they've set forth. It never has become an issue for me to actually look, so I don't know.
Yeah.
So there are fairly expansive designation of their operating procedures, how they're supposed to conduct, how they're supposed to frame their communications, all kinds of things that they're supposed to be doing. But I've never looked, so I don't know if they have a conflict of interest statement per se.
I've never looked either, but it would be highly irregular for an organization to not have something to define what's a conflict of interest in their code of ethics.
And Representative Driscoll, I know the last time the biggest conflict of interest was that the one that Deloitte had, they were mm-hmm. the actual actuary for one of the funds that we oversaw, and we were looking for a firm for us to do their review and for them to review themselves. So I think that was what we considered, and I think probably in the end knocked them out, if my memory is correct, because you know the fact that even though another office would be doing it, have themselves overlook their own work, I guess the whole Pension Commission didn't like that idea mm-hmm. back then. I think they no longer have that. We have that. The Minneapolis funds are now part of Paris, so they would be overlooking what the Para Board is doing as opposed to overlooking what they themselves did.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Mr. Chair, not to necessarily correct you, but just that you're combining a couple of memories. I think we had three potential conflicts of interest the last time. Gabriel Roter Smith, Milliman, both. Gabriel Roter Smith was bidding on some business in Minnesota at the time. I don't know if it was the major pension plans or who. Or it was the St. Paul Teachers. They had acquired the St. Paul Teachers. So they were already the actuary for one of the plans and would not have been appropriate to review something they had already done. Milliman was bidding on the Duluth teacher job at the time, and then Deloitte had been doing consulting work for someone who had an interest related to a public pension plan but was not doing actual work for a public pension plan. In the case of Gabriel Roter, they indicated that they would... if they were retained, they would discontinue their work for St. Paul Teachers. Milliman indicated if they were requested to make a presentation, they would drop out of the bidding for the Duluth teacher job. And I don't remember what Deloitte explained what their role was, but I don't recall the mechanical things they were suggesting that they might do. They were selected as one of the finalists. As Milliman was also, and Gabriel Roter was not.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, just a couple comments. And one was basically with the Price Waterhouse and our comments about the team actuary approach. and that we're not sure if it would work, and obviously it worked okay with Milliman, but that is not what we signed up to for when we took Milliman. So I just want to make sure that we understand that we did not sign up for that team approach. Perhaps that's something that we could be comfortable with, but I you know, and I'm glad they made it work, but to me that you brings up that liability portion again that you talked about, Representative. And the other thing, Mr. Martin, do we need to be concerned about the varying the additional, let's see, what is it? The 3% review on the additional fee related items that everybody has, you know, something different. 3% on some go with the CPI, hourly, you know, compensation rates are increased. Is that something that we need to be cognizant of?
Mr. Martin.
Members, yes, I've been giving you the first year fees. All of them, as I remember, have proposed increases in their fees over the 5 years. Where it's disclosed, it tends to be in the neighborhood of 3%. And a couple of them did it based on the consumer price index, which, if it follows recent trends, could be less than 3% per year. Mm-hmm. So they're all comparable in that sense. So I thought it was the real comparison was the starting point, because they're all going to go up about the same relative to that starting point. If your concern is it doable within our budget, if it's a budgetary and appropriations issue, we can. These would have been tight if we, but for the fact that we're going to have some staff vacancy periods and some salary savings, and that the replacement staff is going to come in presumably at a less significant compensation, we've got room in the budget. Otherwise, this is right at about what we're get for the budget right now with the current staff. But it is doable within what I see as the budget capacity at the moment. We do have some for the first year of fiscal year. We have some carry forward money from the prior year, mm-hmm. as I try not to spend everything I'm given. Typically, do not, and so there's some. It's 90 or 100,000 is what we have in the budget for this for the actuarial consulting contract per year right now. And but I've got some extra money that's where I plop it usually when I carry it forward. Then it gets turned back if we don't use it.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Martin, do we need to be, is cost a primary factor then when we're looking at these firms?
Mr.
I mean,
Martin.
Should we just take off the high end and on the reviews? Seems to
Mr.
be the biggest chunk.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we can, if we hired the highest price, we have enough capacity in our budget to survive it. So if the highest price one is the one you think is the optimal candidate or among the four or three optimal candidates, I wouldn't worry about price.
Okay.
If you're looking for value, for, you know, cost versus service, then they may not be the best choice. But this is all doable within the current commission budget.
Okay. And Senator Rosen, coming out of construction field, sometimes the low bid makes it up on stuff later on and end up being the high bid. So it's not always that. And it also reminds me of the one astronaut who was sitting on the rocket to go into space and said, just remember, we're sitting on a huge bomb built at the lowest bit by low bid. So he joked about that. So
we've got to be cognizant of that. But we,
Mr. Chair, one of the things that I think we need to look at,
Representative
too, thank you, is that we've got a 5-year contract that we're looking at, and everybody's trying to, as a bidder, lock down what those expenses are without tying themselves to something, because you're looking 5 years into the future. That's an awful long time when you're looking at these things. What we really need to do is we need to probably in fiscal 15 and 16, we would be relying more on some of the hourly kinds of services because of the institutional knowledge that is retiring from the pension commission's staff and support. But I think that when we get into 17, 18, 19, we'll be relying less on that because whoever the new executive directors and individuals that are being brought on board will be able to come up to speed on some of those kinds of things. So I think that what we want to do, because we've got so many variables that are happening here, the contract is coming up, we've got retirements, we've got relatively new people on the pension commission. I think that in this case, we shouldn't say that the major overriding concern is what it's going to cost, because when you start amortizing that out over the number of people who will be affected by this and the amount of institutional knowledge that's leaving, and we're going to need that because none of us is full-time financial experts when it comes to these kinds of things, we're going to be relying heavily on that. So I think we need to have a partner in this that the Pension Commission feels comfortable and confident is going to give us the information that we need to be able to make these decisions on behalf of retiring employees in the state of Minnesota.
Well said. So, members, if you want to, let's look at our things and take our agendas that we were given and
I've wrote notes on mine too.
We can get fresh agendas and then we can use those and rank in our order one through seven and go from there and
no ballots
no but well there's more than four ballots.
Do you want us to rank order them or just put X's by those that we don't want, or how do you want to do this? Indicate if we do want.
Why don't we rank order them? That way, and then when we get the results, then we can look at them and maybe have a discussion of it after. But I think we rank order them, and we'll take who gets the most number ones, twos, threes, and fours.
Okay.
Is that kind of how I see everybody else check the other ones?
Okay.
I'm an election judge in my jurisdiction. So I asked about the ballot stuff in question.
Thank you.
Names on our ballots.
This is not the DFL convention where they.
We didn't have to do that at our convention.
They're in the DFL convention, and you sign your ballot. So.
Mr. Gelman is in the audience. This is starting to remind me of Elections Committee, Mr.
If you have per diem statements with your per diem. Slips, we can.
I've got them.
Okay.
Oh, did you already grab mine?
Yes.
Oh, good for you. I didn't even see you do it. You're quick.
Representative Nelson needs to.
Senator Rosenstein, you want to sell? I just.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. You see me winding down. All right. Get that little. Count up the total, and the smallest total would be the highest.
Okay. You already got
working down.
Hurry it along. Brian,
you wore shoes that expose your toes. I suppose you can count to 20.
You're just about to get the fourth one.
Okay.
No, right. You're not.
No,
oh, I guess not.
It was nice that we only had seven bidders in the sense that doing the summaries of these things is not that much fun.
No.
Well, thank you, Mark, for those efforts, because to try to search out the dozen or so criteria questions is not an easy task.
Well, we used what we did 5 years ago and just used the same outline, the same questions. But we sent this to over 100 actuarial firms. If 50 had sent a bid in, holy moly.
Yeah, no kidding.
Your retirement might have been sped up. Is that right?
Yeah. I wouldn't blame them if it was.
We were joking earlier with before it started with Mr. Burke that the when it was, his date was, and I said, well, he'll probably come in one, call in one day and said, I'm not coming anymore. I'm done.
Yeah.
How long do they get to have a their interview? Do we allow?
It's really kind of up to Senator Pappas how long she wants to do it. My suggestion would be probably a half hour apiece.
Do we usually go off a set of questions that we come up with?
In the past, we have done that, I think, yes. And I'd be happy to do that again, yes.
And if we have, I would say if we have questions, if we have questions that came to our mind as we were going through the review, email them to Mr. Martin, and then we can, so he has them, so we, mm-hmm. And if you think of any more, when we do have it, if they're there, that way they can get asked, and if you can't be there for that meeting, you email them in, that way they can get asked by
the 17th?
I'm not sure, I know she's asked it's for the date.
Towards the end of July, or yeah. Mid or end of July is...
21-22
is the Lisa actually pays attention to that.
I saw the email, I just...
It's not entirely clear that those dates will work. But it's also not entirely clear that they won't.
Who's the politician?
Yeah, totally. And we totally understood what she was saying.
That's really
sad. Well, it's like when it was asked when to set this up, the dates work for me, but I asked Lisa to
round robin
with everybody else because I know... We all have conflicting things going on all the time, so.
You know, I didn't have it on my agenda at all. Then I had it on my agenda for last Thursday. Finally, I got it right.
I'm supposed to go down to Waterville. And, did you see that on the news?
No.
Oh, all the
flooding?
Oh, yeah. It's terrible.
Oh.
So. Got a big town hall meeting tonight. Okay. Yeah, it's pretty bad. Waterville. Are we? You think so?
Well, Dave was talking about.
Again?
Yeah.
Although the legislation we passed this year dealing with that should mitigate, that's the whole reason for it, but it depends on what...
$3 million.
Yeah, it depends on what happens. Yeah, I know I've heard that those rumors too, if possible, but haven't set a date to...
He doesn't know
if
that'll be enough.
I think the damage is beyond the $3 million would be appropriated for a state contribution.
All right, so this is what I have.
Lisa.
Would you like me to read them in alphabetical order or by numerical order?
Why don't you do them numerical order that way?
Numerical order with the least, which would mean first choices. Milliman with a total of 6. Then Deloitte with 8. Then PricewaterhouseCoopers with 16. Chiron with 18. Buck Consultants with 21. Oops. I forgot Foster and Foster. Sorry. PricewaterhouseCoopers and Foster and Foster both had 16. Followed by Chiron with 18, and Pension Trustee Advisors KMS Actuaries with 24.
So 1, 2, we have tie for 3, so I think the way we would do this, and I'm just per se, it would be 1, 2, and then the 2 3s, and 4, 5, and 6 would be the... Or actually, it'd be 5, 6, and 7 would be because the two are tied for third.
So it was Milliman.
So it would Milliman, Deloitte, Price Waterhouse, and Foster and Foster.
Those are the four we're going
to
ask.
Those are the four we'll send forward to the. Someone want to make a motion to that effect? And
I'll move it.
All in favor? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Who actually moved that?
Senator Rosen. I think they both did it at the same time, but I'm going to say Senator Rosen.
Senator.
Is there any further items that we need to discuss here?
Our work is done in this.
Out of the way? I believe our work is done in the subcommittee. Unless something comes forward that I'm informed that something major comes forward that we have to revisit this. So I think with it, we're done with our work as a subcommittee. So if there's no further items on the agenda and I see nobody rushing to the podium to testify in front of us, we're adjourned.
All right, thank you, Larry, for all of that work.
Thank you for your hard work.
A lot of work, really. Yeah, that was good. Thank you.
Thank you for your diligence.
Yes, I do too.
You had the hard work.
All right. Guys, take care. Have a great summer. See you. Enjoy.
Yeah.
Enjoy Waterville and all the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is nuts. Yes. I mean, what? They have any issues with St. Cloud with it? I know that one rain.
Oh, if they're under a sprinkler.